lined up in deep numbers in the lobby at intermission to buy your merchandise, your products, your CDs. I think you could have sold indulgences if you'd set up a booth.
I never saw a crowd so
enthusiastic there.
I remember that particular concert. Yeah, that was amazing. That was our new CD, Life of Riley's Brother, had just come out, and we sold, in a week, we sold $10,000 worth of merchandise in Wyoming and mm-hmm. South Dakota. It was insane. Yeah. We became a bestseller on Amazon for Wyoming as well. The best-selling album in Wyoming on Amazon was Life of Riley's Brother.
Oh, are you kidding? Wow.
No, the first Celtic
album ever to do that, I'll bet.
Yeah, but, you know, we have to bear in mind that Wyoming is the least populous of all the states in the nation, you know, so keep perspective on our, you know, on our victories.
To get those cowboys to turn away from the pedal steel and listen to the fiddle and the baron, that takes a lot of skill and persistence, I guess, and you did stay with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the Wyoming crowds were always wonderful, too, and, you know, and Laramie, you know. Our first big gigs were in Laramie, pretty much. I think we played Elizabethan Festival there in the late 80s, and we had a bunch of people turn out. And then not long after that, we were playing in the Fine Arts Hall with the help of Rod Garnett, who was our flute player at the time. He was in the music department there, and which was, you know, right adjacent to the Fine Arts Hall, and it's where the music department put on their own concerts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we regularly fill that place, you know, and have I remember like 60 people on the stage, as well as like 800-900 out in the audience, you know.
Well, so without a parade or a pub to play in on St. Patrick's Day, what are you and Gene up to today?
We are packing, basically. I've nearly finished packing my books. We just got a couple of pallets that arrived that we were going to be packing all of our stuff onto. A lot of that is books. And we in a few weeks, we'll be shipping it off to Ireland. We had some gigs. We had a gig tomorrow in Lone Tree that got canceled. We had a gig down at Colorado College where I and the rest of Gold Cannon, part of the time, were supposed to be teaching, but that's all fallen through as well.
College kids have all been sent home.
Yeah, they've been sent home for an extended spring break, and then the idea was if they come back, the course would be taught online. But so much of it was hands-on from Kilcannon members. What we did was, I mean, we'd teach the history and the social context and everything else of Irish music, you know, where it came from and how it developed and spread out and stuff like that. But we also had, you know, had the kids playing tunes and then had them writing tunes and writing poetry and giving a concert at the end of the 3-week course. And that was not stuff that we felt we could do online.
Well, that's a shame. That's not going to happen. And so many similar things have good things are not going to happen.
The professor whose class it is, Vicky Levine, she's retiring this year, so that's not going to happen again down at Colorado College. Unless somebody comes in and decides that was a great class and we really should resurrect it. But I don't see that happening.
Shame to let it slip away.
Because those kids were writing some great stuff. I mean, they were putting on concerts of original music in Irish style, and they were understanding it, and they were coming up with very credible and creditable music and poetry, you know. They were wonderful.
I'm amazed.
I'll miss that.
Yeah. I'm amazed at the young people today and how quickly they seem to be able to pick up musical ideas that, you know, used to take years.
I mean, just kind of smart and I was going to say humble, but yeah, with the humility that it sort of takes to really kind of understand something rather than kind of jump to the licks and the tricks that will impress somebody. They're kind of really more interested, I found, in genuinely understanding something, you know, and that's very gratifying.
After the 1952 presidential election, Harry Truman retired from the presidency, and a reporter asked him what was the first thing he was going to do when he got back to Missouri. He said, well, I'll take the grips up to the attic. So if we get past that particular answer, what are you going to do when you get to Ireland?
I am going to learn to write poetry. I'm going to see what we might do in getting Kilcannon over to play music in Ireland.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that would be really great. And, you know, we have a lot of stuff that we've done here in the U.S. in terms of, like, music that we've written and or arranged for orchestra and as well as chorale and stuff like that. And you see some of that happening in Ireland, too, but not that much, you know, and I think, you know, I think we would have a contribution to make there. You know, orchestrating folk music is a, you know, is a very difficult sort of thing because it's not kind of, in lots of ways, it's not in the nature of folk music. And a lot of times what people will do is they'll just put down, you know, like a bed of footballs, you know, the strings just playing long notes, basically like chords underneath the band playing on top of it. But there are other ways of doing it that doesn't really compromise the folk nature of the music that you're playing. And we've been working on that collectively for some long time now, you know. As well as storytelling, we have we'll be the Pook and the Fiddler and Happy as Larry, but we have other stuff as well that like for instance, I'm thinking O'Toole and the Goose that we did with the Colorado Symphony, whereby, you know, you have the narrated story, you have the band playing music and the orchestra playing music as well to support that. And I thought that worked very well, you know, and it's something that we might try to sell in Ireland.
Sounds like a bold experiment. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what I've found a lot here with orchestras, and we've had some dealings with societies that promote orchestras, and, you know, we heard a lot of how they were sort of eager to find new pops material because orchestras are not bringing in the audiences that they want to with just the classics. So they like to put on pop shows, you know. But they're always, they say that they're always looking for new pop stuff. But, you know, to get them to pay attention, it's been a slog in the past. I mean, it's like, we got this new pop show. Here's a recording of some of it. Give it a listen. You know, you send out electronic press kits and stuff like that. They just remain firmly unopened, you know? And, you know, they're going to have to try harder. You know, they're just going to have to. Because, or maybe they've heard about us and decided sort of some bad things about us. I don't know. But that's been my experience anyway, is trying to get the band booked. You know, we've got a whole Christmas show that's orchestrated, and time and again, we get people that are interested, and then they decide, no, we're going to go with the Nutcracker. I mean, there's, you know, imaginative, innovative booking for you, you know?
Or the Step Dancers, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the booking of the band became a real slog, and as for the festivals now, so many of them are rocked up. You know, it's basically it's rock music with fiddles.
Yes, yes,
and
true.
Whatever sells beer, basically, because so many of them. We've played in Canada, for instance, and in Canada they have microphone companies like Sennheiser that are major patrons of the festivals there. But you come to the U.S. and it's Guinness or Jameson or something like that. And what you have to do then is you have to bring in that demographic that's going to drink. And if you want to bring that demographic in, you give them the rock and roll, and, you know, just call it Irish rock and roll or whatever, or, you know, there are any number of terms for it, you know. And fair to them if that's right. But, you know, I think of that as being a kind of precarious way of, you know, basing your festival. If you have to be bringing in people that are going to drink, you know. And then giving them what they want, and the trad stuff gets played in the tent at the back, you know.
And instead of paying the trad boys, they have to take that money and pay the security because they're drinking so much. Well, an uphill slog, I guess, but may the wind be at your back as you go through it.
Oh, it will be.
It
always has been, really, yeah.
What can we expect from the other members of the band?
Do you know, I don't know. Mike has been doing his jazz gigs, and he's been playing gigs with Brian in various sort of iterations of different groups. He's still Laughing Hands are still working. Brian has a group called Loose Association. Mike has been doing lots of work with Inside the Orchestra.
Are they going to
in
take
terms
their...
of any one thing? Hmm?
Are they going to take their duet doing the Chinese one-string peanut can instrument?
Oh,
are they
no
gonna
doubt. Everyone
go big with
while,
that.
Yeah. They're one-string hoodoo orchestra,
yeah. Take that on the road.
Well,
it's really been great talking to you, Mick, and I'm sure going to miss Cole Cannon. I'm sorry that today of all days, you and the band should be idled, but we can only hope for better things in the future, and we just have to wait a bit for that future to come around, huh? Happy trails
all
to
will
you.
Be well. Yeah.
Happy trails, and may the sun shine on you. Yeah. Say you had to climb it there. I never found it in my travels through the Emerald Isle, but you know your way around better than I.
It's wet, but it's nice. It's nice. Check it out. Yeah. Come and visit. That's what you need to do.
Didn't you tell me once you went to Gormanston, the school north of Dublin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I spent 5 years in that prison.
That was where I finally got to face-to-face with the real Irish trad music on my first trip there.
And that would have been 1970, the year
72.
After I left.
Oh, really?
72 was it? Okay.
Yeah, I got there in 72, right after the Bloody Thursday or Sunday, whatever it was. The Troubles had just been fired up again, and so all the Americans had canceled their travel plans but us. We were the only Americans on the island, and everybody loved us. And so, I wound up having a long conversation with Ted Fury, in fact, and I think it was because they got him to leave the circle and get me to follow him, so I'd quit playing my banjo with all those guys because I really didn't know what I was doing. They wouldn't tell me to shut up. They were too nice for that, so they just figured a way to get me out of the circle.
Yeah, I think the real reason was he was jealous of your beard and wanted to talk to you about it.
He actually, he had his beard was had it forked. It had a big space in the middle where the fine tuners on the tailpiece of the fiddle went, and it was an odd kind of look, kind of a devilish look about him. and I should have got to the record library and pulled out the Furies for the show today. Maybe I'll still have a chance. But anyway, enjoy the clement weather of Bantry and the like, and have a great time there. We hope to see you back. We know that you've lived in Boulder, and so Niwot's curse is still deeply seated within your soul. You guys are going to be back someday, I know.
Doubt, yeah.
But between now and that time when we see you again, please be well, stay healthy, and keep the music going.
Okay, thank you, Fergus.
Thanks so much for calling, Mick.
Sure. Okay.
Away you go. Our guest was Mick Bolger of Cole Cannon, and soon to be the former Cole Cannon, or at least the Cole Cannon on hiatus. And we can hope for reunion gigs in Ireland and back here as well. It's not quite time for that, but we're going to get back to some recorded music now. And in fact, let's go ahead and play the last cut from the album that they recorded at my studio back in 90 or 91 or so. Doug Birch, the great dulcimer player, was in the band at that time. And this is his performance of the title cut of the album, The Parting Glass. Thank you. Former national champion, hammered dulcimer and mountain dulcimer player, Doug Birch. On that recording, a member of Colcannon, and he played for you The Parting Glass. A lot of people grow up in Brooklyn and come to Boulder. Various people leave Boulder for different places. Doug Birch grew up in Brooklyn, came to Boulder, and lived here for several years, and then, I never figured out why, he moved to Lansing, Michigan. Highest point in Lansing, Michigan, the overpass on the highway leading out of town. So I don't know, but he's doing music up there, and nice to hear from him. I am joined in the air studio now by KGNU's news director and a genuine Irish woman, Maeve Conran. You grew up in Donegal, isn't that right?
No. I grew up in Dublin. I spent a lot of time in Donegal and the Donegal Gaeltacht, which is the Irish-speaking regions of Ireland. And the kind of Irish version of summer camp, the equivalent is getting shipped off to these places where you're not allowed to speak a word of English. You get sent home and you live with families. And so I did that for several summers where you go up for a couple of months. So that's where I have a grow, as they say, for Donegal. In and around where Clannad are from, it's called Mina Cladi. I don't know the English version of all of those words, but anyway, it's a certain part of Donegal, the Gaeltacht part. But that's where I have spent a lot of time there in Donegal, and yes.
We've come a long way since the penal times when it was against the law to speak Irish.
Yes, now there's an effort. Well, not an effort, not that there is an effort. It's a huge part of the Irish education system to what they call matriculate, so to pass out of secondary school and to go into college. You have to pass an Irish exam to be a civil servant, to be a Garda, like a police officer, a teacher. It doesn't matter what you're teaching. You have to have a certain proficiency in the Irish language and you have to pass a certain level. So there have been huge efforts to try to reintroduce it as a daily spoken thing, you know, which has been a challenge. But certainly there are parts of the country where Irish is the first language, and those are the Gaeltacht regions. Donegal has them, Cork, Kerry, Galway, the kind of the western parts of the country, certain part of Waterford as well, and Irish is the first language spoken. There is the national broadcaster RTE, Radio Telefiche Éireann, does have dedicated Irish language channels if people are interested in listening to them. Radio na Gaeltacht, and TG Cathair, which is the Irish language television channel as well. So
similarly in Wales, but Ireland, I think, got there first. And it was a major thing. One of my favorite authors, Flann O'Brien, didn't go to school until he was 11 because there wasn't an Irish language school in the neighborhood. And his father wouldn't let him go to be taught in English. He learned English just by hearing it from other people speaking. But I thought that was quite fascinating. And on my first trip to Ireland in 1972, I had an old couple to look up. A friend of mine that I'd worked with had lived next door to them for 6 months and loved them. This fellow had fought in the Revolution, P.J. O'Connell. He even saw a picture of him marching next to De Valera in the big parade. So they welcomed us into their home and had us meet their children. Their daughter Fionnuala and their son Sean was teaching Irish in the schools, I think in the elementary level in his case. I had thought that in order to graduate from the equivalent of high school, you had to have proficiency in Irish.
But yes, you have to have a basic exam. You have to have passed a certain level.
Not to get into college, but just to get out of high school.
Yeah, to officially be a high school graduate, there's a final exam called the Leaving Certificate, and you have to pass essentially an Irish exam to fully matriculate, to fully graduate at a high school, and certainly to get into any college course you have to pass Irish. Now there are provisions now, because we've seen actually a huge amount of immigration over the last few years, that if you weren't in Ireland for a certain portion of your childhood, you know, and you weren't kind of steeped in the language and haven't learnt it from the age of five, that you were exempt from some of those protocols. But what they're actually seeing is a real revitalising of the language from the immigrant community, because you have kids who are being brought over when they're young. Maybe English isn't their first language and another European or, you know, African language is. And they're picking up Irish with gusto because their brains are little sponges. And while they're learning English, they're also learning Irish. So there's been this wonderful sort of emergence of folks who weren't actually born in Ireland who were really getting into the language as well.
When I was there, my friends, or the people I met, PJ O'Connell and his wife, they lived in Cork. I told him I was looking for traditional Irish music, and it was getting hard to find back then. It hadn't really become a dominant form yet. It was still just show bands and lounge singers and that kind of thing. It was harder to find, really hard to find trad music. But he said, well, I know a place you could go, and Sean will take you there, my son. And we drove that night to the highest pub in Ireland, it was known, in Coolay. And they were native speakers there. And we got there, walked into the pub, and it was deserted. It was just a woman behind the bar. And so Sean went up and asked her in Irish what was going on. She said, well, they're all out of wake, and they'll be here soon. And sure enough, the town showed up, and so we heard some real trad Irish singing, and it was a remarkable evening. But I was going to ask you, well, Dublin. So you grew up in Dublin. Pretty big parades there on St. Patrick's Day. Kind of a big, it's Christmas, New Year's, Easter, and everything wrapped up into one.
Well, yes,
not?
It is our national holiday. But primarily, it's a holy day of obligation, as they say, in the homeland, which is you're supposed to go to Mass because it is in honour of St. Patrick, which is a patron saint of the country. Now, so when I was growing up, yeah, every town, every village, and certainly all the cities had parades. But what has emerged recently are whole festivals and carnival-style parades. I mean, absolutely massive, and people travel to them. Of course, every single parade has been cancelled, given the current situation that we're in. So this is kind of a first. But yeah, no, of course, growing up, everybody had a parade, every little town, every little village. But the what we've seen in the bigger cities, certainly Dublin, Galway has them as well, and Cork, like big, almost carnival-style parades now that have emerged, because it's really turned into a festival. So St. Patrick's Day, and almost weekend festival, depending on where the day falls.
Were there issues about inclusion in the parades? Because I know Denver's parades over the years, various ones there have been issues about excluding different groups who wanted to parade. For example, gay and lesbian groups or other things like that who wanted to be a part and were excluded in some years, included in others. Were there issues like that around the Irish celebrations?
Well, possibly years ago, but of course the Irish voters overwhelmingly approved same-sex marriage. I believe we were the first country to do it by a popular vote. Mm. So those issues of inclusion don't really exist anymore, and certainly not in the kind of like in the last 10, 15 years, that hasn't been an issue. But yeah, no, I mean, the ones of old would have been certainly a lot more parochial. You know, the church is a huge influence in all of that. That's gone, you know, back many, many years. But no, the recent ones, I would say, certainly not the LGBTQ. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think St. Patrick's Day has done a pretty good job, or, you know, the festival organisers have done a pretty good job in inclusion. And in terms of what you get bands and marching bands from around the world who actually participate in the big Dublin St. Patrick's Day parade.
So it's actually a destination performing ensemble.
Yes, you would have tons of bands and marching bands and bagpiper bands and everything. A lot from, of course, North America and Canada and Australia, but people would travel to actually participate in the big parade in Dublin.
So from the beginning of the Dublin parade until finally the last dog was hung and the last little cart was trundled down by some kids, how long are we talking about here? How many hours would that take?
Oh, it could take it. Dublin, the big ones, about 3 hours. I mean, depending on how fast they're going. I mean, it's huge, yeah. But, you know, depending on the town, they're very similar to probably the Macy's Day Parade or the big parades that you'd see in New York and Chicago. But certainly the ones in Dublin and Galway, they're big events.
So, and the parade is over. Families might go home, but the adults without the children might head to the pubs.
Or even with the children first. So it wouldn't be excluded in that way.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things
breathing all that secondhand smoke.
Yes, well, luckily not anymore. And that's been the case
when
for
you
a
were
while.
Growing up, you were...
we wouldn't have gone to the pubs. But of course, the pubs would have been huge. Yeah, I mean, it was it's a real family day because the kids are off school. You often have a couple of days off. And then it just turns into a big celebration. As I said, it is the national holiday, so it is a time, you know, families getting together. But of course the pubs play a huge role in that. There would often be, you know, music going on in pubs, little dance festivals, little kind of, you know, get togethers and sessions, as they call it.
Fireworks too?
I don't think we had it. Possibly in recent years, but when I was growing up, we didn't have fireworks. We weren't that fancy, Fergus, but things have probably evolved.
I think it's more of an Anglo idea, you know. The America picked it up from the English more than from the Irish.
Yes, possibly.
Because the English didn't trust the Irish with gunpowder.
Maybe that was it,
Probably the deal. Well, good. It's really great to hear you talk about that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's fun. You know, I haven't been in Ireland on St. Patrick's Day in a really long time. But one of the things is, like, of course, the big national parade in Dublin was typically televised, so I would watch it from afar and different things. There was something that was supposed to happen today, and I haven't heard from my friends as to whether or not it did happen. We've heard the reports of folks who were self-isolated in Italy going out to their balconies and singing. Everybody was supposed to do something similar today at noon Irish time. I'm yet to find out whether or not that actually happened, but that would have been a sight.
What's your family doing to celebrate St. Patrick's today?
Everyone's staying home.
You're working, I know, but...
Well, my children tried to trap leprechauns, mm-hmm. which is actually, it's an American thing. We don't do that in Ireland. So they tried to trap leprechauns, and I think we were going to have a parade around the kitchen.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So kind of keeping it low-key.
Oh, well, I think everybody needs to do something in your self-isolating way, in your distance. Find a way to lower the distances and celebrate with everyone else. We'll all sort of join virtual hands around the microphone here as we celebrate. And Maeve has just been handed a note.
I have been handed a note saying that our engineers are continuing to repair 1390 AM, our signal there, and make it more resilient, we will have to periodically power it down for brief periods today. So apologies to our 1390 AM listeners, and thank you for your patience as we're working to make more resiliency there. But I did want to say, Fergus, you know, as folks are maybe looking for other things, there's a wealth of wonderful Irish music online that's available. RTE, which is the Irish National Broadcaster, you can stream all of those shows, and there's wonderful music programs that are available to anybody in the world. So if we're looking for other opportunities to connect with folk in a more digital sense, I would encourage folks to really check some of those out. There's some fantastic Irish comedy shows that are on some of the streaming services too, so I'm happy to recommend them as well.
So you can journey to Ireland,
yes,
virtually on this day and feel like you're really there. Oh, that's great. I was, as I said, my hosts in Cork were old folks who'd been there a while, and I talked about Irish humor, and PJ's wife, and I don't remember her name now, but she says, I'm not Cork myself. I don't have that sense of humor. I'm Cove, which is about 8 miles away or so, right? She says, I'm Cove, but I don't have that Cork sense of humor. But I was on the trolley the other day, and I heard two women talking. And they were talking about the husband of one of them and what a lazy man he was. They said, the one woman said, oh, he's so lazy he'd wake up tired if he dreamt he'd done a day's work. And it was that sort of thing. So, yeah, you say their Irish comedy is available online.
Online. Right? Derry Girls is this incredible comedy that's set in Derry in Northern Ireland in kind of the early 90s, right? You know, in the Troubles, before the peace agreement. It's absolutely hysterical. It's about these girls going to a convent school. Couldn't recommend that one enough. And for Cork fans, it's a really funny series, The Young Offenders, about a couple of young ne'er-do-wells and their adventures around Cork as well. But there's actually really funny Irish TV shows that are out there that I try to recommend to people to share the Irish humour. But actually, they really translate well, and a lot of people are really into them.
For many, many Irish in America, Cork was the last part of Ireland
they
saw.
Well, certainly Cove, exactly. Cove was the destined, you know, the sailing point for all of those transatlantic ships, including the Titanic.
So a lot of people listed there, you know, or were listed as being from Cork when actually they just sailed from there. But that's only one of the many inaccuracies in the Irish story. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Maeve.
You're welcome.
St. Patrick's Day special this morning. Maeve Conran has been, you've been our news director, our co-news director for, 10 years now?
Something like that.
Golly.
Yeah, 10, 12, something like that. Well, banachdi na féile pórig urlv agus urt, Fergus, and to all our listeners at home, ag éisteacht a bhaile.
Thank you so much. And we're going back to music once again, and I'm expecting that before long, we'll get a call from Carl Cumley, our founder.
The Diamond is a ship, me lads, from the Greenland coast she's bound. Quiet as all garnish it with a bonny lassie's round. Captain Thompson gives the order, sail the ocean wild. Sun it never sets, me lads, and darkness dims the sky. And it's cheer up, me lads, let your heart never fail. Where the bonny ship, the Diamond, goes searching for the whale. Dock at Liverpool, the lassies stand around, shawls all wrapped about their heads, and the salt tears running down. Don't you cry, my bunny lass, though you be left behind. Rose will grow in Greenland's ice before we change our mind. And cheer up, my lads, let your heart never fail. Well, the bonny ship, the Diamond, goes searching for the whale. Here's health to the Resolution, likewise the Eliza Swan. Health to the Battler Montrose, the Diamond Ship of Fame. We wear the trousers of the white, the jackets of the blue. When we return to Liverpool, we'll have our sweethearts new. A cheer up, my lads, let your heart never fail. We're the bonny ship, the Diamond, go searching for the whale. Bright both day and night when the green lads come home. The ship that's full of oil, me lad, money to our name. We'll make the cradle for the rock, the blankets for the tear, and every lass in Liverpool sing hush-a-bye, me dear. Cheer up, my lads, let your heart never fail. While a bonny ship, the Diamond, goes searching for the whale. And it's cheer up, my lad, let your heart never fail. Well, a bonny ship, the Diamond, goes searching for the whale.
Support comes from KGNU listener members and Ska Street Brew Stillery, a farm-to-table style restaurant featuring 30 handcrafted Ska brewing beers on tap and a one-of-a-kind mixology program from Pete Street Distillers. Located at 1638 Street in Boulder, Colorado, and open daily for food, beverages, happy hours, and more. More information at skastreet.com.
Well, I hope I'm joined on the phone by Carl Cumley. Are you there, Carl?
I am here. Banachtina Fela Padraga Fergus.
Wow.
Konastatuinish. How are you today?
Worked
and
first,
a happy St. Patrick's Day.
Worked first time. First time for me. And I am having a happy St. Patrick's Day. I'll get around to the St. Patrick's nap later on, but it's having fun with the music right now and with the Irish people. And talking about Irishness, we had Mick Bulger on earlier, and you just heard Maeve Conran talking about her childhood in the St. Patrick's Day celebrations. But you, you've done something really significant about St. Patrick's Day. You formed, you started out of ex nihilo, as it were. You formed from nothing the St. Patrick's Day special Morning Sound alternative program. Tell me how that happened.
It was 1983, and I was a brand new Boulderite. I had just moved to Colorado about 2 years before, and I'd spent some time as a radio DJ up in the Pacific Northwest. And so I still had my third-class radio broadcaster's license endorsed with Element 9, and I called up the station. And I said, are you going to be playing Celtic music on St. Patrick's Day? Hoping that with all of the music diversity on KGNU, that might be something that they do and I'd be able to listen in. It was a real passion of mine. Ever since my dad had been listening to the old Hootenanny television shows that were popular 60 years ago, and I just thought, well, gosh, you know, we ought to have some of that music in Boulder. And I listened to Paul Metters tell me that there wasn't anyone that could program that music at KGNU at that time, which was surely an artful deception, because I'm sure there were. But I said, you know, if no one else will do it, I'll do it. And, there you were, Fergus. You were there back in those days. And, of course, you could program this show. But I volunteered.
I've learned a lot since those days from you about it all. So I'm better able now than I would have been then.
Well, you're very kind. But the same year that We heard from Mick Bolger that the roots of Colcannon went down in the fertile soil of Boulder County. It was that same year that I called up, and Paul said, well, come on in, and we'll put you on the air with someone to babysit you because you don't know how to run our board. And so that was how it all started. And then it morphed into a program that aired between 10 p.m. and midnight on Sunday evenings. And then it became part of Musica Mundi, which, of course, continues today. And then about 12 years ago, we moved to a one-hour show every Wednesday at 7 o'clock, which praise be to the powers and to you and to Pat McCullough and, of course, Roger Hara and Maeve and Leslie Lomas and other people along the way. We've had just a wonderful group of extraordinarily knowledgeable, extraordinarily talented airshifters who have really made the little bit of Celtic music that I know a tiny bit about into a so much better offering for our listenership.
Well, contrary to the English characterization of the Irish, we do manage to work together a little bit. So we formed a rotation here, a cabal, if you will, a rebel alliance of Celtic DJs.
I like that. I like that, the Rebel Alliance. I like that very much.
And we've managed to put the show on for a few years now and even fill in for one another when life throws us a curve, such as today.
Such as today. As I told someone earlier, it absolutely breaks my heart not to be there in studio with you. And if the powers smile on us, we'll be back next year. But this year, discretion being the better part of valor, it was good to stay away and let you helm the ship as you have done so marvelously. It's just been great to listen to. I particularly loved the Sharon Shannon cut, the Bag of Cats that you played earlier.
The title, and, the title sucked me in. I couldn't let it stay there.
Yeah, it was a good one all by itself. And, you know, I have been trying to come up with ways to celebrate the day because ordinarily I take most of the day off of work and come in and do the show. And back in the old days would drop by either the James or Connor O'Neill's for a drop of the stuff and celebrate that way. But because it was about 60 years ago that I got introduced to Celtic music through my dad and that folk music tradition that was blossoming in the United States in the early 60s, the two of us are going to Skype tonight, and we're going to arm ourselves with the Holy Trinity of Guinness, Jameson, and Colm O'Neill's wonderful cream liqueur called Hard Chaw, and we're going to just celebrate ourselves. So I'm going back to my roots a little this evening.
Well, family is always the primary importance with the Irish, isn't
it? It is, and you know, Fergus, I know that our listeners have been treated to listening to Mick Bolger, and of course the loss of Mick and Jean and Colcannon to us here in Colorado is a sore, sore blow. But I look forward to seeing them come back at some point and making good music in Ireland and hope to catch up with them as well. And how much fun to hear Maeve talk about going to the west of Ireland up to, I think she said Galway, to
Donegal,
language. And Donegal for her camps when she was in school. And many, many years ago when I took a couple of years of Irish Gaelic in college, we used the Buntus Caintia books and tapes that I feel fairly certain Maeve saw in the early, early days of her study, which was probably about the same time that I was in college. So what a great show, and thank you so much for carrying on the tradition. And I do want to let you get back up into music for the last 10 or 12 minutes before the top of the hour. So, Mila Gurmagat, and thank you again so very much, Fergus. What a pleasure to listen to your show, and with great gratitude that you are there and able to captain the starship.
Well, thanks for your call, Carl, and thanks for your creation that I'm merely trying to relive here and do my best. Have a great day and have a great time with your dad. I think maybe the things that he was listening to back in the early 60s included the Clancy Brothers, eh?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I grew up as a tiny little kid listening to the Clancy Brothers. So if you've got any Clancy music on the fire there, I will be singing along as you play.
Well, it's great to hear your voice, and I'll hope to see you soon, Carl. Thanks for the call.
Very good. Fergus, thanks so much. Take good care.
Bye-bye.
Lesson spoon. A small bird sat on an ivy bunch, and the song he... One pleasant evening in the month of June, as I was sitting with my glass and spoon, a small bird sat on an ivy bunch, and the song he sang was the jug of punch. Tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle, tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle. A small bird sat on an ivy bunch, and the song he sang was the jug of punch. What more diversion can a man desire than to sit him down by an alehouse fire? Upon his knee a pretty wench, a hand on the table, a jug of punch. Tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle, tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle. Upon his knee a pretty wench, a hand on the table, a jug of punch. Let the doctors come with all their art, they'll make no impression upon my heart. Even the cripple forgets his hunch when he's snug outside of a jug of punch. A-tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle, tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle. Even the cripple forgets his hunch when he's snug outside of a jug of punch. And if I get drunk, well, the money's me own. And them don't like me, they can leave me alone.
Go get him, buddy.
I'll tune me fiddle and I'll rosin me bow, and I'll be welcome wherever I go. Tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle, tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle. I'll tune me fiddle and I'll rosin me bow, and I'll be welcome wherever I go. And when I'm dead and in my grave, no costly tombstone will I have. Just lay me down in my native peat with a jug of punch at my head and
boom!
Tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle, tooraloo-ralloo, tooraloo-ralle. Just lay me down in my native peat with a jug of punch at my head.
The lights of Cork Harbor.
as we sail far away. But the light in your smile will brighten our tomorrow as we bid sad farewell to our own yesterdays. Find peace in my arms as we rock upon the waters. God grant us safe passage across the great sea. I look in your eyes and find courage for the crossing. Child of my heart, Alanna Macree. Great hunger and fear break the heart of my dear island and drive us now westward to seek better days. For the bones of our dear ones and our own beloved family, too young and too many, are laid in the clay. Find peace in my arms as we rock upon the waters. God grant us safe passage across the great sea. I look in your eyes and find courage for the crossing. Child of my heart, Alanna Macree. And I hear it told, there's a lady in the harbor, tall, strong, and stately. She stands by the sea, and she holds out her torch to bid us warm welcome to the land of our future, Alanna Macree. Find peace in my arms as we rock upon the waters. God grant us safe passage across the great sea. I look in your eyes and find courage for the crossing. Child of my heart, Alanna Macree. By swiftness agat, imwar ogar anishka, ahi haslan violin, arumal ar solya. Mishnachum devadura, Hushla, a story, Alanna Macree. Find peace in my arms as we rock upon the water. God grant us safe passage across the great sea. I look in your eyes and find courage for the crossing. child of my heart, Alana McCree. Child of my heart, Alana McCree.
The Incantation. Fain we ask Erin, faring o'er ocean's motions to mountains, fountains and bowers, showers, rills rushing, gushing waves welling, swelling streams calling, falling foam thunder under lakes filling, willing, abiding, riding rounds, holding olden fares meetly, fleet to lift loyal royal king's towers, bowers for crowning, frowning foes over, royal mills, rover mills, warlike, star-like sons therein. Erin shall longer, stronger show honor on our Milesians, wishing in trouble, noble isles wooing, suing we stay here, pray here to sail in, wailing maids royal, loyal chief leaders, pleaders, blend, pray in, blend prayer in, so we seek Erin. KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, get ready for the BBC News.
Hello, I'm Debbie Russ with the BBC News. The US government says it's planning a big and bold economic stimulus package to fight the coronavirus pandemic. The Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, said he'd be discussing details with Congress with a view to passing laws very quickly. The Washington Post said the package was worth $850 billion. President Trump said the idea was to inject a large amount of money into the economy as quickly as possible.
I think we want to get it done and have a big infusion as opposed to going through little meetings every couple of days. We don't want to do it that way. We want to go big, go solid. The country is very strong. We've never been so strong, and that's what we're going to be doing. We don't want, with this invisible enemy, we don't want airlines going out of business. We don't want people losing their jobs or not having money to live when they were doing very well just 4 weeks ago.
The British government has announced a huge program to help the economy overcome the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, or Chief Finance Minister, Rishi Sunak, announced a package, the biggest element of which was about $400 billion of government loan guarantees to businesses hit by falling trade. That's 15% of GDP.
When I said in the budget that we will do everything we can to keep this country and our people healthy and financially secure, I meant it. These are only the first steps. We have never faced an economic fight like this one. But we are well prepared. We will get through this, and we will do whatever it takes.
Mr. Sunak also said pubs and restaurants would be able to claim their losses back on their insurance policies, and smaller companies would get cash grants. Individuals would be able to claim a 3-month holiday from their mortgages. European Union states are trying to agree a coordinated approach to travel restrictions to stop the coronavirus spreading without ruining the economy. The European Commission has said it should be possible to check people's health at the borders without leading to queues that could expose those waiting to the virus. It also wants countries to require returning citizens to quarantine themselves. France has ordered people to stay at home, as Lucy Williamson reports.
Paris today is a strange kind of place. It's getting on for rush hour here, and I can see a few people milling around, but really hardly anyone at all. It's a few hours since the new quarantine rules came into effect here, and already I've seen police out and about stopping people in the street, asking them where they're going, what they're doing. For a long time, it seemed as if normality was the chosen defence of many people here in France. Now the new rules are in place, anxiety here has suddenly spiralled, and the silence here today is eerie.
That's Lucy Williamson reporting. You're listening to The World News from the BBC.
With the latest news updates for KGNU, I'm Maeve Conran. Four additional Boulder County residents have tested positive for COVID-19, bringing the total to 11 people. The Boulder Public Health Department says two of the recently tested people had not left the county, confirming that there is community spread of COVID-19 in Boulder County. As of yesterday, there were 160 cases confirmed in the state. However, Governor Jared Polis said that there are likely thousands of cases that have yet to be detected. An economic forecast was presented to the General Assembly on Monday, outlining the impact of the coronavirus. Speaker of the House, Casey Becker, a Democrat from Boulder, says that while an exact number is not yet available, things are evolving so quickly and many, many sectors are being impacted.
It's the tourism industry, it's hospitality and hotels, a big decline in sales tax, also a big drop in income. Because oil and gas prices have not been this low in a very, very long time. They've stopped drilling. I think oil and gas prices dropped below $30 a barrel yesterday. So in time, then you'll see a drop in property taxes paid locally to school districts from oil and gas. You'll see a drop in severance tax, income tax, sales tax, severance tax, property tax. All of those are going to have declined.
Colorado janitors, firefighters, healthcare and airport workers are being significantly impacted by the coronavirus. Many of them are not able to work remotely. Unions representing workers in those sectors held a press conference today to highlight how a lack of paid family leave and trying to find childcare, as well as the issue of possible layoffs, are all realities facing many of these workers. Ron Ruggiero, president of the CEIU Local 105 union, said that the current crisis highlights the glaring inequality that already exists in society, as well as the need to have paid leave available for all workers.
The issues around income and wage replacement as people are quarantined or people lose jobs or income has to be at the center of the debate in this country. We're hearing a lot of talk about a corporate bailout. There needs to be a people's bailout so people are protected economically, but also protected as much as possible from even contracting, again, this virus.
You can find the latest news regarding the coronavirus, as well as resources and more information online at kgnu.org. We'll have another update at 2:55 as part of afternoon headlines. For KGNU, I'm Maeve Conran.
Thank you. Undertaker, Undertaker.